Now, another thing that most people get wrong is, and that's, I think, because it's an old school and that's just how people talk, but some most clients think that the plans are getting approved by council.
Yeah.
It's not the case.
Yeah. Hello and welcome back to the number one. Oh, for fuck's sake. What was wrong with that?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. Take seven. All right, welcome back to the number one home building podcast in Australia. Today, we're doing a very popular topic. We're going to break down the steps into actually building your dream home. What are the steps of beginning to end and little tips and tricks and processes you should know through along the way. So obviously let's start off the usual by introducing ourselves and who we are and what we do. So do you want to kick us off?
Sounds good. My name is Chris Baptista. I'm the owner and director of Homes by CMA, one of the largest builders in Queensland, and we've already built over 1,000 homes.
Love it. And I'm Jaden. I'm the marketing manager at Homes by CMA. So let's just cut straight in and we've got sort of a bit of a step-by-step breakdown and we've numbered these as well, right? So did you want to kick us off with step number one of building?
Yeah, so it's going to sound like a really obvious step, but buying land and having land is the first thing.
No way.
And you think it's easy, but it's actually harder.
It is.
Than most people think. At the moment, because of the grant, everything has been really hard to get. And land is one of those things. So it's not as easy as just buying land. You also have to do a little bit of research when you buy it. We spoke about this in the past once, but you know, things where if you buy in a brand new estate, you got to watch your soil tests. You got to watch, you know, the slope on your land.
That's it.
So that's in a brand new estate. Not as bad as if you were to build, for example, in an existing area and have a knockdown rebuild.
Yeah.
In those cases, you actually need to watch, you know, is there a sewer that's going through the property? Is there acoustic requirement? Is there bushfire? Is there, you know, there's so many that's requirements it. Into the land. So usually, I would say when you look for the land, already start to have a chat with builders.
Yeah.
And you don't have to get locked into anything, but have a chat. You know, this is the land you have in mind. Is there anything that I should know about? And most builders that know what they're doing would do a little bit of research and would just be able to tell you, you know, there's a minimum flood height, there's a sewer that's going through the property, there's bushfire, there's a bit of slope, so retaining is going to be required.
That's it.
So we'll be able to advise. And, you know, some people will advise and they decide not to purchase the land.
Yeah.
And some think, you know, the land's actually a lot worse than what they thought or a lot better than
that's
what
it.
They thought. So yeah. First thing, yeah. Land. Usually what I recommend is getting pre-approval before you even start looking for land. You will find it's much easier to negotiate and purchase land if you have pre-approval on your finance.
For sure, yeah.
So yeah, first thing, land. I guess, again, it sounds easy, but it's not that easy.
It's true.
Once you have land, obviously, as soon as you make the decision on the block, start to have a chat with a builder. Land is sort of easy. You know, you sign a contract, you sign it, it's done.
Ta-da, you own it, yeah.
That's it. A house will take a lot more planning. So that's the it. Sooner you start that process, the easier and the faster it will be. So, and land will come down in two areas, I guess. It comes down to the registered blocks and the non-registered blocks. So a registered block is a block you can start to build on right away. It has a title, it's registered. It might take, you know, 30 days to get registered in your name, but at least the land is ready to start. A lot of the houses nowadays don't have, I mean, a lot of the blocks nowadays don't have registered land. And you buy a block based on what's called a disclosure plan.
That's right.
A disclosure plan is a plan that shows how your block is going to look.
That's it. So you haven't even really seen the real block yet. You're just looking straight off a plan.
No.
That's it.
And that's what most people maybe don't realize. A lot of, for example, our clients buy a block that they haven't even seen.
Yeah.
And what you do, you just go based on a disclosure plan. So you might not even have a street name, but you got a rough plan on the blog that shows the size. It could be 12 and a half by 30 meter long.
That's it.
It should show the slope on the block, which is what's important from a builder's point of view. And it should show anything else, for example, such as retaining wall, concrete retaining wall, or if there's anything specific into that block. Because you are buying that block based on the disclosure plan, that plan is really important.
For sure. So is there anything that people need to look out for when they're looking at sort of blocks and that? Anything that you'd recommend that they need to sort of be mindful of?
Well, yeah, I guess like we spoke about anything to do. And again, a land seller has the obligation to give you all that information.
Yes.
So, you know, you could buy a block in a Stockland community. Mm-hmm. They will have to give you, if it is applicable, they would have to give you a bushfire report, acoustic report, and any other report that is relevant to your block.
Would you say it's generally safer to go with one of the bigger name developers like Stockland's?
For sure. I mean, you know, because of the brand they have and the size of the business and the procedures, you just can't go wrong with it.
That's it.
Some of the smaller developers, and not all of them, but some we have found to be a little bit harder to deal with. Mm-hmm. And they might, you know, hide things, I guess, along the line.
That's it, yeah.
But usually, you pick a block, you ask the developer or the person that is selling your block for the disclosure plan if the land's not registered, and all the information on the land.
That's it.
From a builder's point of view, we will need the disclosure plan. Yes. And on a new land estate, we will need what's called a plan of development.
Yes.
So the plan of development is important because it will show exactly what we can build and where we can build it. So most of the land is pretty small nowadays. Mm-hmm. Again, it could be a 12.5 meter wide block. The plan of development will show which side is the zero boundary wall.
Yes.
And for those that don't know, a zero boundary wall is a wall that is pretty much right on the boundary, which means that, you know, you can build a bigger house. If you didn't have a wall on the boundary, most of those blocks wouldn't be able to fit a two-car garage.
That's it.
And then the plan of development will also show you the setbacks. So for example, usually say it's 3 meters to the front wall, 5.4 meter to the garage, 1.5 meters to the side, and maybe 6 meters to the back.
That's it.
So with that plan of development, go and see your builder, and that's where you're gonna start picking a plan. And obviously the builder will make sure it fits on your block, because you could be buying a block and you think the house of your dream is gonna fit and it might not even fit.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, it's good to have a look with home builders. We're pretty quick at this. Most of them would be pretty quick at seeing what house can fit.
That's it.
And at least you get a really good idea. You can lock in your plan and you can start working on the plan and the inclusions list.
That's it.
So from that point, obviously you've locked in your land already. Ideally, you want to lock in a builder as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Again, there's no pressure, but the sooner you do it, the faster you can start your house. Because once your land registers, you're going to start paying interest on the loan for the land. So the sooner you can start the build,
the better.
The less money goes into your vacant block of land.
Exactly. Plus it's not just sitting there.
Your rent, I guess. So ideally, you know, you pick a builder. Again, watch the previous three episodes of Nailed It, and we explain a little bit as to what you choose, how to choose, the questions you need to ask, and all those things.
That's it.
And so you pick a plan, you know, and from that point, once you've picked a builder, they will usually ask you for a deposit.
That's it. So a lot of people get a bit iffy with the deposit, but just tell people what exactly that deposit is doing. It's there for a purpose, obviously.
Yeah, and some people, you know, think, oh, deposit, you know, it's 5% of the contract. It's not like that. Yeah. So most builders would charge a deposit anywhere between, I would say, $1,500 to maybe $4,000 to $5,000, depending on the house style, the design, and how much work is actually involved. So again, you know, it's no massive amount, but that deposit for most builders, what it would cover is the plans, because obviously you will need plans in your house. And again, most people don't realize that, you know, oh, it's just a floor plan. It's not just a floor plan.
That's right.
Again, I'm going to talk about most builders. We would have a site plan that shows where the house sits on your block. Mm-hmm. We'd have a landscaping plan that shows, you know, what landscaping is involved. We'd have a driveway plan. We'd have a floor plan. Yeah. We'd have a electrical plane that shows exactly where your LED downlights are, where your switches are,
that's it.
Where your power points are, where pretty much everything is. Joinery plane that shows your kitchens, where drawers, where doors, where everything is. Joinery elevations, including the bathroom sections, the house section, and all those details so that you know how everything's going to look.
That's right.
And finally, most of them, again, would have a little bit of a 3D render to see how the exterior of your house would look.
That's it.
So the deposit covers the plans, and then it also covers a soil test, and it also covers a survey. So as we've spoken before, the soil test and the survey are really important because they are the one that can fluctuate the price quite bad. And again, where a lot of builders are going to make money, while not necessarily doing much. So again, watch the previous videos we've done because they're quite important.
That's it.
So yeah, you pay your deposit, it covers those three things. Pretty much from that point, you just deal with the sales consultants of the builder you pick.
That's it.
And you fine tune your plans and you fine tune your inclusions. That's it. So once you pretty much have finalized your plans and inclusion, and that takes time, you know, by the time you go back and forth and change a switch here, change a door there, change this here, you know.
Upgrade to this.
Upgrade to this. That's exactly right.
All of that.
Once you get close to your finished plan and a finished inclusion, we normally book in a color selection. And again, we've spoken about this before, but always try to have your color selection before you sign that contract.
That's it.
Because once the contract is signed, it will sort of end up being a variation and it can pretty much charge you really whatever they want.
That's it.
So that means that if you do your color selection before the contract is signed, you have a fixed price contract, it's done, and the builder can't come back at you saying, you know, you need to pay this or you need to pay that.
That's right, because which that's is what a lot of them do. So
yeah,
you can get
yeah.
caught out real quick. So it's best always have it done prior to.
Definitely, definitely. Awesome. So yeah, so you got your plans, you got your inclusion, you got your soil test, you got your survey, you got your color selection.
Perfect, what's next?
From that point, you're ready to sign your HIA contract or whatever the contract the builder is using. HIA contracts as what most builders use. Some builders use a QBCC one, some builders use the Master Builders one. You know, they're all roughly around the same, I guess. And they're all pretty straightforward. Pre-done template, we're just gonna fill in the name, the price, and the client's sort of details. So
perfect. So you've had your HIA contract. Where do we go after that?
Yeah, so then the HIA contract, why it's really important is because this is the document you give to your bank.
That's it.
The bank will not accept a standard plan. They will not accept an unsigned inclusion. The bank will want the HIA contract and the signed one, obviously.
Yeah.
What happens is once it goes to the bank, they will do a valuation to make sure that your finance is going to be all good. And again, this is where it's quite important because you might have $300,000 to borrow to build a house. And you think, oh, you know, my build cost is 290, I should be okay. Yes and no, because if the builder has overcharged, for example, on a small single story house, the bank will pick on that and will say, the house is actually worth 250.
Yeah.
So you will have to pay for the sort of difference.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So always good to send that contract as soon as you can to the bank, get your finance approval. Once you get your finance approval,
I don't know. Before we keep going, I feel like that like 7 days or whatever it is, or the 2 weeks or whatever, however long you wait, is like you're just on edge the whole time because you don't know if you're going to get approved.
Oh, the finance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just sit there and you're like, okay, like, I don't know. It's just a bit of an anxiety kicks in, I suppose. And then once you get it, you're like totally cool and you're like, oh, whew, all right.
Well, yeah. And that's why, again, it's really important. This is a good point because it's really important to make your contract subject to finance.
Yeah.
Make sure. Because again, some builders might say, oh, you know, the contract is not subject to finance. You don't really read it. Again, another point, have a good read of the HIA contract.
That's it.
Make sure everything you've spoken about is in there and make sure that obviously there's a finance clause so that if for any reason you don't get finance, the contract is not proceeding.
That's it. Otherwise, you're fucked.
You don't want to get stuck into a contract. And I have heard that story a few times.
Wow.
Where clients have paid a 5% deposit and they just can't go back after because obviously locked in a contract with the builder.
That's it. All right. So you've got your finance, your HI contract signed. Where do we go now after this?
So then the builder will usually get, and again, it depends if you have a knockdown rebuild or if you are building in a brand new estate.
Yep.
If you are building in a brand new estate, the builder will usually get the covenant approval. So again, for those that don't know, most of the new land developers have strict guidelines as to what they want to have in their estates.
Yeah.
You know, it could be that you can't use pink as a color for your facade. Not that there's anything wrong with pink, but you know, some developers might say you can't use pink.
Yeah.
Some developers might say you can't have face bricks
or
you can't have a tiled roof. Yeah. You know, so they just set guidelines.
So with mine, one of the really funny things is that you can pretty much, they're pretty good with most things, but they're like, you must have 4 or 5 plants at the front.
Oh yeah, well yeah, that's the one. And some of them specify the size and the leaders and everything. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, what sort of leaves do they can
that's
have?
It. Like,
what?
Medium brown to dark brown plants. Yeah, yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what has this got to do with anything? Like,
exactly.
What's the matter?
No, some of them are actually very particular on the covenant approval. So so it's important to get that early because a developer, you know, they might take 2 to 3 weeks to get back to you with the approval on that. Mm. And you need the approval off the covenant before you get to the billing approval, ideally.
That's it.
So yeah, again, you got your finance approval. We got the covenant approval. The builder has ordered the construction plans by that point. So there's a few different sets of plans, I guess. And the one you sign is usually called a contract plan.
Yeah.
And the final plan that a builder is going to use is called the construction plans. The construction plan has a few extra things, such as, for example, a slab plan, a drainage plan.
That's
you might have bracing plan. So it's just got a few extra technical plans that are not really necessary for a contract, but are necessary when you send a plan to your billing approval.
Yeah.
Now, another thing that most people get wrong is, and that's, I think, because it's an old school and that's just how people talk, but most clients think that the plans are getting approved by council.
Yeah.
It's not the case.
Yeah. No. Yeah,
it's really not the case. It's a saying where, you know, my plans are gone to a council. It doesn't go into the approval of council. The only thing that gets approved by council is if you have a relaxation.
Yes.
So for example, you know, your house it sits too far to the front and you still want to proceed with it even though it's not within the rules, so you ask for a relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
This gets approved by council. The plumbing approval gets approved by council. So this is, money-making thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put it in the nice way, but it's just a money-making thing.
Just cut to the shit.
Yeah, so pretty much council will charge the builder for each plumbing fittings you have in your house. So we send a plan to them and they issue us with a plumbing approval.
Yeah.
So that's what council do. In terms of the house itself, it's approved by a private certifier.
That's right.
So a building certifier. So we send a plan to them. There's heaps around. They have to be licensed. Obviously, they have to have a certain amount of insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And the building certifier will assess the plans, make sure it complies with all the relevant codes, make sure it complies with the plan of development, make sure it complies with the development approval. So each of those estates has a development approval that shows very strict guidelines as to what can be done. It would also show any reports such as bushfire and acoustics. So for example, if your builder and if you have missed that there's higher risk of bushfire and there's, for example, a BAL 12.5 on your house, the certifier will pick on that because that will be part of the development approval or it will be in the overlay on the council maps.
Yeah.
So it goes into the certifier. Usually a certifier on a normal house will probably take anywhere between 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, that was my next question is like, what's the rough sort of timeline we can expect between all these plans? And the
certifier usually 2 to 3 weeks. Most of them would get the plan back and stamped. Council is also the same unless you have an acreage block.
Yeah.
The reason why an acreage block takes longer is because it's a non-sewered block. So there's a HSTP application for a non-sewered block and this can take 4-6 weeks. So this can take a little bit longer. So pretty much we got now the billing approval.
That's it.
As soon as a builder gets the billing approval, again, it goes straight to the client so that we can send it to the bank because the bank will need the stamped plans to then issue The builder is with what's called the letter of commencement.
Yes.
A builder will not start your build, unless you're a cash sale, obviously, which there's quite a lot nowadays, actually. it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, the builder will not start your build until they have proof from your bank that the bank has finalized the finance and you are ready to start. And that's what's called the letter of commencement from the bank.
That's it. And that's a rough stage. That's when you start paying back your loan to the bank and you start seeing that money just trickle out of your account.
That's exactly right.
So, this is real.
By that point, also, you would have, depending on how you've organized your finance, but you would have already paid your 5% deposit.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So contracts also have a set of progress payments.
Yes.
Starting with the deposit. So the deposit.
Just keep taking the words out of my mouth, man. I was getting there.
So the deposit is usually 5%.
Yeah.
And obviously, and again, I'm assuming most builders would do this, but we credit the initial deposit that you've already paid to the builder and then issue the balance of 5% deposit.
Yes. Cool. So we've got all our council approved plans and obviously you get your letter of commencement. What happens from here?
So then,
it's exciting.
From a builder's point of view, yeah, it's quite exciting. Obviously, from a client, you got your finance, you got a letter to the builder.
You are good to go.
And you're good to go. So you can just chill and just watch the house getting built.
Yeah.
From that point, the builder usually would have estimators and we would raise all the purchase orders for the job.
Yep.
How it works is usually all the purchase orders on a job. So all the quantities, the materials are pretty much issued at the start of the build.
That's right.
Which is why sometimes it's hard for people to make changes.
That's right.
They don't realize.
Variations, yeah.
That's
it
exactly
gets quite
right.
complex.
They think, oh, we issue things as we go. It doesn't work like that. A builder will usually send all the purchase orders at the start of the build so that all the suppliers and the tradies have plenty of lead time.
That's right. So I think it's really important then to obviously double check your plans and make sure you're 100% certain that those approved plans 100% everything that you need and everything that you want, because after that it can get really tricky to change and it can also, like, obviously variation after variation can also add up as well. So
And you know, again, most builders, because of the complication that a variation has, it has to go through so many people.
Yeah.
Most builders would charge at least $1,000
as
a variation fee.
Yeah.
And yes, sometimes $1,000 is probably excessive.
That's it.
But it's important to know that from a builder's point of view, and I know this is for clients, but from a builder's point of view, I think it's good for clients to understand where we are coming from. And it has to go through a sales consultant. It has to go through an admin. It has to go through the estimator. We have to create the variation.
That's it, drafting.
We have then to get that variation signed. It goes back to admin. Then we got to go to drafting. We got to change the plans.
That's it.
Once the plans are changed, it goes back to the tradies so that we got to make sure they get the latest plan. It's just, you know, one variation like...
And as you can imagine, that also all takes time. So now your build is on hold and now your build's going to take even longer.
For sure. And some variations are not bad, but some obviously, like anything to do with structural is obviously going to be quite hard to get done. So like Jaden said, always try to get your contract signed. And once you sign it, ideally this is it.
That's it.
In an ideal world, you don't want to make any changes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Cool. So we've got to this stage now. Now it's time to start hitting ground. Where do we go from here? Talk us through it.
Yeah, so the next stage, that's where it starts to get exciting, and that's where people usually send us photos because they're quite excited. It starts with a side cut.
Yep.
Pretty much, land is never flat.
Yeah.
You might look at your block, you might think it's flat. It's never flat.
Oh, it's flat.
So what we do is we send, depending on the slope on the block, we send a bobcat or an excavator or a drought. There's lots of different machines we can send depending on the slope. We make your block flat.
Mm-hmm.
From that point, we get a surveyor to set out the house.
Yes.
So again, unless you're a very old school builder, and some still do it, unfortunately.
No comment.
We get a set out done by a surveyor. So what the set out is, so when you get to your block and so the block's been cut, so all you see is dirt. And you got to make sure that what's important from a construction point of view is that you get rid of all the turf and everything on that block.
Yes.
You do not want to put a slab on turf or anything like mulch or anything like that. It's just got to be dirt.
Yeah.
And so when you're gonna block, when you're gonna walk on your block,
everything all good.
As a client, you will see timber pegs on the ground, either pink or white, yeah. with a small nail in the middle. This is where your house sits.
Yeah.
So again, that's where it starts getting exciting. You can see where the house is, and those are installed to really, really precision.
Yeah.
Because it might not seem like much, but if we have 1 meter setback from the wall to the boundary, we don't want to be at 990.
That's right. It's got to be smack bang on, right?
Yeah, and the surveyors, you know, they don't measure from the existing pegs or anything like that. They do a proper set out so yep. that we know and they give us a certificate yep. saying that the pegs they've installed are exactly where the house is meant to sit.
Wonderful. So after the surveyors come, what happens then?
So surveyors come, then we book, again, depending on what sort of soil you have on your block, we either put the concrete piers first yep. So that, you know, you might have a bit of fall. So we put concrete piers on the fill section. Then the plumber comes in, does his drain. So pretty much the drain stage is where all the underslab plumbing comes in.
That's right.
So anything to do with your toilet, your showers, your floor waste, they go at a drain stage.
Mm-hmm.
Again, talking about the plumbing approval from council we talked about, council comes out and does a plumbing inspection. Again, yes. something most people don't know, but they come out and they do a plumbing inspection and they are very strict.
Yeah, which is good.
Which is good because, again, something that not many people think about, but if you've got really highly reactive soil, and again, go watch the previous videos.
Yeah.
But if you got highly reactive soil, imagine if you put pipes that are very rigid
yeah.
and you don't put any expansion.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is your soil is going to start moving and your pipes are going to start cracking. So you might have leaks and it's going to cause slab issues and lots of issues. So council goes out, inspects that everything is done as per code and as per the plans.
Yeah, all right. So we've just had the drainage all being completed. So what happens after that?
So the next step then is the slab. Mm-hmm. So again, most builders, we use a waffle pot slab. So the prep usually lasts a day. So they put all the board, the plastic, the pods, the steel, the reinforcements and the formwork.
Yep.
And it's usually poured the next day. So from the drainage, so we've got the set out, which is usually a day. Then next day, we might have the concrete piers. Then next day, we might have the slab prep.
Yep.
The drainage. Mm-hmm. Next day, slab prep. Next day, pour.
Yep.
So that all goes pretty quick.
That's it. And then boom, you have a slab.
You've got your slab. That's it. And again, an engineer has to inspect, or a certifier has to inspect that slab. So mm-hmm. all slabs that are getting built would have been inspected by someone.
Awesome. So you finally got your slab down. You can finally see the outline of roughly where everything's going to start, going to be.
Mm-hmm.
What comes after slab?
Another very exciting stage, which is the frame.
That's it.
And again, while we talk about a slab, another thing that is quite important. So going back into the progress payments into your contract,
mm-hmm.
The deposit stage is usually the only stage you have to pay before the stage is completed.
That's right.
From that point, every single stage you pay, you only pay once the stage is completed yeah. and you're happy with it. Slab is laid. What happens is the builder will send you the invoice for the yeah. base stage.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you have 7 days to pay that invoice and so on and so on. So obviously make sure you try to pay that invoice as soon as you get it and you're happy with the work.
That's it.
Also a good point, unless the builder sent you a photo or a confirmation, I guess.
Yeah.
It's always good to have a look and just yeah. make sure it's actually been done
and
make sure that it looks good.
Yeah.
You don't want to rock up on site and the slabs looks like it looks yeah. like shit. Yeah. That's yeah. exactly right. So it's a lot of money. So before you forward the invoice to the bank, I would always have a look at that stage. Yeah.
That's it. And I kind of like it how they do that because obviously then
for sure.
it just sort of your payment sort of just increases over time and it's not just the lump sum up front.
So that's exactly right. And some people think, oh, the house is $200,000. I'm going to have to pay $200,000 now. And it doesn't work like that.
That's right.
It's a slow
burn.
Process, yeah. I guess. Yeah. So yeah. And as the stage goes, it reaches the full amount.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So you've got your slab. Now we moved and we have our frame.
Frame stage.
Awesome. What comes after frame?
Well, frame stage, first of all, very dependent on the designs if you have a single or two story, but
yeah.
frame stage is usually made of wall frames.
Yep.
And
no kidding.
yeah. Well, I guess because again, most builders nowadays would use prefabricated wall frames.
Yeah.
Some do a stick frame on the spot.
Yeah.
It's just not a common thing now.
Yeah.
So pretty much what we do is, the frame all gets built in a factory. Mm-hmm. They get delivered on site and we just assemble them.
That's right.
Sounds easier than it is also because it's not that easy.
Yeah, yeah.
But we just put all the wall frames and then we put all the trusses.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much your frame is completed. So after frame stage, we would obviously finish the frame. We would
have another frame inspection.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So again, depending on the builder and what they've done, the frame is either inspected by the certifier, so the person that has approved the plan, or a engineer.
That's right.
It very much depends on the builder. There's no good or bad, I guess, you know, but as long as it's inspected by one of those two. So frame's done, the roof will usually go on, again, which is great because as soon as the roof's on, it means you can start going inside.
That's right.
Rain will affect the job, obviously, because, you know, of the bricks and all that, but at least you can get started with the roughing.
That's it.
And that's the next stage. Obviously, the roughing stage is where we put all the plumbing, the electricity, ducted air, and all the things that need to be roughed into the frame.
That's it, before the plaster goes on, essentially.
Before the plaster goes on, because otherwise then, you're trouble.
Good luck, bro.
Good luck, yeah, that's it. Exactly. So again, critical to make sure that you're happy with everything and, you know, feel free to ask your builder to have a walkthrough at frame stage just before plaster because you want to ensure that everything's been done before the plaster goes on. Bricks, not as critical. The bricks can start. That's not too bad. Yeah. But once the plaster goes on, it's over.
That's it. Mm. Cool. So we've almost pretty much answered it in this question, but what happens obviously after the rough-in stage?
Yeah, rough-in stage. So then we would get, and again, another thing that I did forget to mention is plumbing. Another inspection happens at rough-in stage.
Yeah.
So that's inspection number two.
That's it.
And again, they're quite strict with the plumbing inspection just to make sure we see that things are done well.
Yeah.
And as per standard. So plumbing's all done, electricity is all done, you might have air conditioning and all that's done.
Cool.
We get onto the bricks.
That's it.
And we get onto the plasterboard.
That's it.
So this is the start of the next stage, which is the enclosed stage.
Yeah.
As the name says it, the enclosed stage is when your house is all enclosed.
That's it. Your windows start to go in.
That's exactly
like that.
So enclosed stage is always a good stage because the frame is good, but you don't necessarily get the vibe that it's a house yet until the plasterboard goes on and you get a feel for the room.
That's right.
And a very important thing that I personally found is when I walk through a frame, the house looks small.
Yeah.
So don't stress out if this is the case. And then you walk a plasterboard stage, the house looks a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. No, you know, it looks a bit bigger.
Yeah.
And then.
But you still don't get it.
You still don't get it. Then when you walk and the house is painted, it looks a little bit bigger again. And when the floor coverings are on, it looks a little bit bigger again as to how it should look. So we've had a few clients that, you know, they stress out a little bit like, is it that small?
It's
the
room? Oh, I didn't think it was that big.
That's exactly small, right. I'm like, no, don't worry. it looks bigger as the steps progress.
That's it.
Yeah.
Cool. Beautiful. So we've roughed in. We are now enclosed. What happens after everything is now enclosed?
So the next stage is then the fixing stage. So what happens is the builder would usually install the kitchens.
Yep.
And those kitchens would have been all measured up by the time the frame was done.
Yeah.
So again, you might think, the kitchen's not in yet. I can make changes. Most likely your kitchen's already been designed and already been built.
Yeah.
The kitchen goes in, the waterproofing goes in.
Yeah.
Waterproofing is very important because obviously you don't want to have any leaks.
That's right.
So again, another good stage to have a quick look at. And usually again, linked to that stage, most builders would have what's called a tile meeting. So the tile meeting is when you rock up on the morning of the tiles getting laid. You speak with the tilers and the site supervisor if you have any preferences to the grout or anything like that. And you look at the tiles that have been delivered to make sure they match what you've ordered or what you have on your color selection. Quite important because obviously we all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
All the tile suppliers might make a set of mistakes too. So it's always good to have a look on site.
Yeah.
So kitchen goes in, the waterproof goes in, all the floor coverings that are tiled would normally go in.
Yeah.
We obviously don't put the carpets and stuff yet, Because then what happens after that stage is we get the house painted.
That's right.
In the meantime, we'll see we work inside and we work outside. So we might work on the rendering at the front, the bagging on the side, the eaves on the outside. So usually work will be happening inside and out at the same time. So then we protect everything inside. We protect the kitchens, the floors and everything, and we paint the whole house. So again, that's when your house starts to look really, really good. And obviously you've picked the right color.
That's it. It starts to come to life.
That's it.
Yeah. Next. What's next after? So we've had it all painted and all that.
Yeah. So next, I guess all the stone bench tops, depending on how big of a house and when everything has happened. Ideally, you want to have your stone bench tops, obviously, the tiling done, then the painting done.
Yeah.
And then you would get, after the painting, you would get obviously the plumber to put in all the sinks, the taps and all that. And you would get the electrician to finish off the house. They would put all the switches, all the light fittings, all the pendant lights and all those things. And in between, obviously, once those two things are done, then we would get all the carpets installed, because you don't want to get a carpet too early so that, you know, they all walk on it.
Yeah.
And things like, you know, fly screens, blinds, and all those things. Yeah. Again, in the meantime, we usually work on the outside. So driveways, external tiling gets done, downpipes get installed, and all those things. So by that point, your fixing stage would have been done.
That's it.
And we are getting very close to the practical completion.
Yes.
So the practical completion stage is the last stage of your build.
Before handover.
That's practical completion is when you have a walkthrough with your site supervisor. And you walk through with them, they would usually have a bit of blue tape with them.
Yep.
And the reason for that is the practical completion is there for you to have a look at the house before you move in so that you can identify any small defects that you're not happy with.
Yes.
So the site supervisor would have a practical completion form with him, whether it's on an iPad or whether it's on a paper form.
Yep.
The blue tape, you know, you might find small paint defects, you might find, you know, there might be a blind missing.
The door handle needs tightening, small things like
that. That's it, small things. And what happens is you do a list with your site supervisor.
Yeah.
Make sure, ideally you agree on that list, obviously. If you don't, there's another section of the items that we do not agree on. But normally we agree on all the items that need to be fixed. You sign it, the site supervisor signs it.
Yeah.
And pretty much that's when we're ready to send a final invoice to the bank.
Yep.
So the bank has the final invoice. In the meantime that they organize the payment for that, they will send a valuer to come through the house and just make sure the house has been built as per the plans that they had.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, they are not paying for an invoice where the house might be at fixing stage, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So
has that ever happened?
I don't know, but I'm sure they do that for a reason.
Yeah,
because otherwise, I'm sure a lot of people would try to cheat and send that final invoice really early on, and then the bank comes out and is like, "Yeah, well, it's not finished."
yeah,
because obviously, you know, the bank's smart.
Oh yeah,
they don't want to make a final payment because it's their money.
Exactly.
So you know, they want to pay on a house that is not finished or that is finished in a really weird way.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily assess the quality of the house, but they just look. I mean, obviously. Unless it looks really, really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they just make sure that it looks as per plan.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So we've pretty much covered all of those. Did you want to touch on the last step of obviously being like handover?
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Should we touch on following up after that in like 12 months?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. So practical completion, final payment, valuation.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. In the meantime, the builder has the list you've done with the homeowner.
Yeah.
The builder.
Working through that.
That's exactly right. So the builder makes sure we usually have a week to week and a half until we get that payment.
Yeah.
And that buys us enough time to fix all those small things. So the builder would fix all the small things, make the house look really good, have a final clean. We are ready for handover once we get the final payment.
That's it. Handover day, probably one of the most exciting days of the build.
That's it. That's it, which is why we try to make it always so
That's
so,
right. So we cool. always try and make it, definitely an experience and something that you get to walk into. And you know, we always, our goal is to always try and make you light up when you walk into your house for the first time, right?
That's it. That's it.
So everything's looking amazing. You get your keys to your house and boom, that's pretty much officially yours now.
Yeah, that's it. So on the day of handover, the builder will usually run you through a few things that you need to know. You know, things you need to maintain. You might have to sign a few documents like the termite management form.
That's it.
They will run you through, and that's what they should do anyway. They will run you through how to maintain your termite protection, that you need to have a once a year termite inspection.
Yeah.
If you haven't got any landscaping, that you know you need to slope the grounds away from the house. Yeah. Don't plant any trees next to the house and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They would obviously give you the keys, which is quite important.
Yeah, and only, so there's usually a construction lock throughout, and then once you're at handover, we always change the lock. So then now you are the only people with those sets of keys right in front of you.
No, and I'm hoping that most builders do that too. But yeah, I'm sure they would.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Because otherwise you've got keys that everybody's got. So
that's it.
Yeah. So yeah, handover happens. You move in, like you can literally move in the same day that you got the keys.
Yeah.
Because, you know, from and that people, point,
people do. People do. We've had times where we've like done handover and then 2 seconds later, they're like rocking up, unloading stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. People move out the way. There's a
fridge.
That's
exactly right. So, yeah, you got the keys. The house is your, obviously before that, again, make sure you've organized your electricity and your gas and all those things.
Yeah.
NBN
and like internet is another big one.
NBN that is a big one. It takes quite a bit of time. So always try to make sure you organize that a few weeks before you actually move in.
That's it.
So that when you move in, you actually got internet. We can't live without internet now. And that podcast is a prime one.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. You need to be watching the Nailed It podcast.
You need to be watching that. That's it.
Necessities, right?
So from that point, I guess the important thing to know is the warranty and the insurances on your house, I guess.
Yeah.
So all builders are licensed by the QBCC.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get your plans to approval stage, we have to get the QBCC insurance on your house.
Yes.
So what happens is all houses have a minimum 6.5 year warranty that is done by the QBCC.
Yeah.
For example, the builder goes bankrupt and your house starts to fall apart, the QBCC has to come back and fix it.
It's 4 o'clock.
Yeah, so what?
No, I'm just saying you got a meeting.
Is that 4:30?
Oh, 4:30.
I thought it was 4:30.
I thought you said you've been saying 4 all day. So.
Yeah, I got 4 my thing, but I'm pretty sure it's 4:30.
Okay, cool. I just thought I'd double check. I didn't want to be rude. Continue.
Now, so the QBCC insurance is there to ensure that obviously the home buyers are protected in case there's something that happens with the builder. And obviously a lot of builders don't have great financials, so they might go bankrupt.
Cool.
So 6.5 years is the minimum warranty of the structural side of your house. So this is not the smaller stuff. This is the structural side. So the slab, the frame, any cracks on the bricks and all those things.
Yeah.
A builder has to give a 12-month maintenance warranty period. So anything small hairline cracks in your plasterboard, a door that doesn't close that well. There's always small things, you know. That's what most people don't realize too. Yeah. A house is built by hand.
That's right.
And we are all human.
Yeah.
You could be the best builder in the universe. There will be some things that you will need sort of adjusting.
That's right. Yeah.
That's it. You know, the temperature change, the house might have been finished in summer and it gets onto winter.
Mm.
Things that are made of timber will move.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do about it. So that's what the maintenance period is here for. Yeah. Like a car, you know, you need to get a service on your car. It's normal.
Yeah.
You might need to change the oil. So obviously there's no oil in the house, but
you get the idea. Yeah.
You get the idea. Yeah. We usually come back, fix a few hairline cracks on your house because your house settles.
That's it.
Few door handles, you know, that sort of stuff. So again, some builders have longer periods for that. Some builders probably don't even have an offering for that. But yeah, you are normally, I guess, entitled to have this. Yeah.
Happy days. Well, I think that's pretty much done the whole summary. And I feel like people get a fair idea of like what the process is now. We've definitely broken it down a lot easier. And hopefully you've understood that and you've got something out of this. Is there any lasting things you want to say before we get off out of people's ears for the longest podcast we've ever done?
No, that's it. But I mean, the only thing that I can think of is for those that haven't built a house, we get a lot of people that get addicted to it.
Yeah.
We get a lot of people that come back to us because building a house is the most fun thing they've ever done.
I must admit, like, this is my first one and I have found it, like, a lot of people get very stressed out by the fact of building a house, but I've actually found it really enjoyable and it's quite a fun process. And just watching something come to fruition is just, yeah, it's very, very cool.
100%. Very cool. There is no better feeling than a brand new house. Nobody sat on your toilet. Nobody slept in your bedroom. Nobody's cooked with your appliances.
That's right.
Nobody's used your dishwasher. It's brand new.
All brand new.
That's exactly right. And I feel that, yeah, we do get a lot of clients that then come back to us because they just love the rush of building a house, yeah.
That's right. And then you get to sit back and you look at this awesome thing and you sit there and you're like, that's mine. Like the bank technically owns it, but you can say I own it, like, you know, like.
Yeah, but that's what's good about building a house, and we're not gonna get into financial advice now, but maybe in a different podcast, but there's a lot of money to be made. From a client's point of view, where, you know, you build a house, we assume that you pay a good price for that house, like a fair price. There's quite a good money to be made if you build in the right areas and you build the right house. Yeah.
That's right. Cool. Enough said, right?
That's it.
Cool. All right. Well, we might get out of people's hair. Have a great rest of the week. And obviously, if you have any topics that you would like us to cover, drop it down in the comments below and we'll definitely consider making a podcast about it.
Yeah. And let us know what your thoughts on this podcast. Obviously, we want to know if we did good, if we did bad. And always feel free to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We always post really cool stuff.
That's it.
And obviously subscribe to the YouTube channel.
That's it. We've been seem to be hitting the YouTube sector pretty hard at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're definitely, you know, wanting to continually grow it. So yeah, beautiful. All right, let's get out of here.
Done.
Thanks, guys. Catch ya. Bye.